So as we enter into this project, in which we're going to invest a year, to, at the end of a year, have our major insight be that parents who are living, caring for, have brought into this world, are concerned about the future, and nobody is an all-inclusive term here, meaning medical professionals, spiritual coaches, helpers, other family members. It gets very profound very fast. Now, in doing the preparation for this project, we did a very broad literature search. And the literature, through a lot of very, very smart people, said that most of the research had been done about the child and the needs the child has. So you find volumes about a specific situation, autism, Downs, whatever, about caring for the child, about the specifics related to that. You find very, very little, at least published research, and this is through major journals, about what do the parents need? Even further, what might the family need? Even further, what might friends need who are wanting to be a helper, wanting to be a good friend? But if it's not known, what's that like? It's kind of interesting, right? Now, it's very interesting that what happens is then we make assumptions about what you need. So unless you have some premonition from God that lets you know, so it's more like a sales thing, that I'd like to sell you something, rather than I'd like to really let you talk to me. Or even further, I'd like to be a part of your life. And any of you that might have gone to the Steve Griebling's workshop on Ready, Set, Grew, we purposely named it Ready, Set, Grew. Ready, Set is like this. But the grew part is, I really have to pay attention. I really have to step back and begin to kind of think about what it is I'm doing here. Especially if I don't know what the needs are. Interesting, right? So, very quickly, what I'd like to get from you, just from a popcorn, pop it out. Why did you choose to come to this particular workshop? And I'm asking the why in terms of a motivational, to get to know you a little bit for 5 minutes, and then we can tailor what we're going to share with you. So, what was it about this particular title, theme, or whatever that attracted you? Ken?
Because I'm not the parent, and I don't know. Okay. So if I want to help, how can I? They're the people that got to tell me. So if it's giving me insights into the parent's perspective, that puts me in a better position to be a helper.
So she wants to know, as a parent and as a person who's starting a ministry, what are some things that would be useful to her in that, both as a parent or as a person who's serving others. Someone else, why did you choose this particular topic this morning? Okay, so as a parent, reflecting on what others might have said, that lets me be a mirror to myself, if I substitute that word in there. And a lot of times, and a very, very profound thought there, because a lot of times our needs become hidden, become habitual. And what we think of, one of our families said to me about halfway through the study, until we started talking about this, I thought my life was normal. Now, this is a family with 7 daughters, and one of their daughters, number 6, I think, had Down, and they didn't, because they weren't comparing, but when they were getting information from other families, it was helpful for them to begin to reflect on their own needs. Someone else, why did you choose this particular seminar? What questions should we be asking? Okay, very good. And we have a long list of those, Jim, which we'll leave you with. We won't cover them extensively, but someone else, why did you choose this particular workshop today? So Betsy's here to be anticipatory. And that's tremendous, because you're going to see as we reveal some of this that anticipating, you know, the theme that has gone through our country over the last couple of years of doing acts of kindness, that's an anticipatory theme that some churches have taken on and some other people have taken on. So anticipating is an important part of this. Someone else, why did you choose this particular workshop this morning? Just another couple of folks, and then we'll move on.
We have a Stephen Ministry program in our church, and we wanted to know or find how we can help maybe some parents. So we wanted to have information.
And there's a whole number of you here from the from the Stephen Ministry, and you already are doing a lot of helping of all kinds of different folks. So this may be something that becomes part of your skill set as well. Okay, let me tell you just a little bit about. And now that we get a sense of why you're here, a little bit about our 12 heroic families, just in a couple of minutes. So who were these folks? Where did they come from? What do they represent? 12 families. Recommended by pastors, recommended by pediatricians, recommended by other folks. They had children, at least one child, who was a child with special needs. Now, we did not focus on a special need, so we had, I think, three that had autism, we had two that had Downs, and the other seven had a wide variety of really, really special situations. Children were all age 4 to about 12. Now, realizing that once you get beyond 12, there's a whole new set of child development needs that occur. But we took a very specific sample that we thought we could work with. We are interested in studying their support system as well as them. So Andrea is going to talk about the kinds of questions and things that we gained. So it wasn't just about mom and dad. It was about mom, dad, friends, people that you consider supporters to you. It could be a friend, could be a pastor. In some cases, there was no support system. We did not screen people for having a wonderful support system or no support system. But we did find families who have been like recent transfers to the area and had no immediate family. May have had a connection that would be loosely called a support system, but really wasn't a support system. So there was a wide variety in that. We weren't interested in studying what was missing with education. But we did find that. What was missing with the spiritual side of their equation, but we did find that. Or what was missing with the medical side. We were interested in studying family and family dynamics. Now we have that kind of knowledge, and we can easily share it with you. So those were our criteria. We purposely did not study single parent families. We know that there's a huge need there. So I don't know if these particular findings would apply. They probably would, but they'd probably be even more exaggerated in terms of what we discovered. We did not study people who were more economically depressed, because that's also a huge group. We also studied only people who were English as a primary language. So each of these three other groups probably have needs that are as strong as those things we share with you, but we won't profess that it covered that as well. Okay, so those were our families. Any questions about who our families were? And this title also, about after the first interview, became very obvious to us that these families were not complainers. That they were not trying to be a drain on society. There's an awful lot of imagery, and it's not just imagery, it's bias that exists about who is a family that has a special needs child. So all of that, whether you call it bigotry or cultural, you know, whatever it is, is a part of this as well. And the main reasons that these families wanted to participate in the work, because they had something that they want others to know. And as a part of this work, then, And the something wasn't a complaint. The something was, we have figured out this particular aspect of raising that child, and you know, we think others could really learn from that. To a family, as I participated in all of those first interviews, that's why it was so interesting to me as a research person. And if nobody ever asked, and if they had things they wanted to talk about that weren't complaints, wow, this was like walking into another country, do you understand? And this country is rich with knowledge and wisdom, and it's not been tapped. We weren't there to tap it, we weren't there to exploit it, we were there to learn about it. So I'd like Audrey to share a little bit about our process, and then we're going to get into some of the exciting things that we learned.
Yeah, and I think they definitely wanted to teach others something through this process, but they also wanted to expose themselves and let us dig into their needs and what they were going through, so that others could realize that they were the ones going through it. And that was one of the things, as I've talked to people that have kids with special needs, is when they read the research or I talk to them about what we found, they're like, wow, other people really feel that too. And even though there's a huge community of special needs support systems in that, as far as the Autism Council and that kind of thing, still people a lot of times don't talk about their felt needs. You know, they're thinking about their kid and how they can meet the needs of their child, but not themselves. So that's what we looked at. So as far as the research process that we went through, we started with surveys. We developed surveys, and I did bring a couple surveys that I can show you. Gary was in this room before we were, so I couldn't get into it. Here we go, Jim. But I printed out a couple of the surveys. I'll pass them around. First, we did a.
Everyone will need one of these pages.
Can I have one of these two? You can just look at these, take a glance, and then pass around. There's two different ones. There's the Getting to Know You, and this was our first survey that we did. And then this was our second one. We did seven in all. This is. It takes a whole village, wonderfully made, but different. And so this is talking about how there are differences in people and all that kind of stuff. And it was really just, so basically what we would do is we had these surveys, and they are online surveys. So I would email the survey to the family. They would have about 2 weeks to complete the survey online. They typed in their answers. Then they sent the survey back to us, and we downloaded it into a database. So we could see their individual answers, or we could look at the whole list compiled of what everyone's response was for each question. So, and Jim is very analytical, so he was able to analyze it and tell me which way he wanted me to sort it and cut it and report it. And so that single handout that we had there, that's one of the reports that we came up with. We took the percentages and all that kind of thing and figured it out. And one thing that I wanted to keep in mind is we're looking at the results of what these 12 families, what their results are, those are these 12 families. But for the families that you're going to be serving, it could be completely different. The important thing is that the tools that we develop will help you to get to what those families' needs are. Not, you know, you can say, okay, well, this is generally what families with special needs kids need, what the parents need. But you can actually go through the process yourself and find out what the families that you're going to be serving really need. So that's the exciting part. So as I'm talking about this, keep that in mind. So the other thing, another important component of it was we had the families agreed to do this, and we did pay them a $300 stipend a month to do it. And if they completed the whole entire process, they had a bonus and a $500 bonus. And we originally took 12 families because we thought at least two would drop out. Well, surprisingly, everybody completed all seven surveys, all seven interviews, and it was just wonderful. They really were just into it and enjoyed it. And you can look, if you look in the program on the page where it says, what did the families learn from their year-long participation in the village research process? There are just a couple quotes of what they gained from the process. We weren't there to meet their needs. We were there to research what their needs were. But they also gained a lot just by going through the process. And so the people that you are working with will also gain just from going through the process of discovering what their needs are. And then you can take what their needs are, look at them, and look at how your organization can work together to start to look at working with the family and that kind of thing. So as after the families gave the surveys back to us, then our research assistants, which we had one who was a professor at Mount St. Joe, and Dr. Fairbank, she was a professor in special ed at Mount St. Joe. We had a family therapist, we had a psychiatric nurse, and then we had two human resource people. And all these people had been trained in Gary's theories on listening, active listening, and rational Christian thinking, and that's why he chose them, because he knew that they understood how he wanted them to be listening. And then combined it with Jim's experience and work at research, they used those skills, and Jim has also used Gary's tools over the years. They used all those things together to really listen to the families and to ask questions and to dig deeper into what the responses were on the survey. So the research assistants would go, after each survey was completed, they would go and spend 2 hours with each family. And they would sit for 2 hours and ask questions and listen, not give any advice. We didn't give any advice the whole entire time. And then they would go back and make notes on top of the answers that the families would give. Then we would make notes, okay, this is what they meant and even deeper way. So that's part of the results, is not just what the families wrote on their response, but what their researchers learned by digging deeper into those research, to those surveys. So then we would take all the information back, look at it all, and then develop our next survey. And so it was a building process where, okay, first we want to get to know them. Now let's look at how wonderful and different they are with each other. Then we decided to do let them do a personality book, where we looked at not what are your, what's your personality type and what are your weaknesses. This was the strength finders, where you look at the strengths. And part of the whole Sweet Life System approach is all about asset building, not looking at weaknesses, but looking at the assets of people. So it was just a process where they went through and did this book, and then they answered questions about what they learned from the book. What was their personality type? What did they learn from it? And a couple of the families just had major breakthroughs in their relationships and how they dealt with their kids. It was really, really neat. So that was another part of it. So we had these 7 surveys that we did, and I think as we looked at it, after we got through the whole entire process, I think we can probably get the surveys down to about 4 surveys, where you would go through a 4 survey process with the families, and I think that we could probably get to the same point now that we've been through it one time with 4 surveys. Okay. Now on the human side, I've talked about a lot what we did as far as the logistics of how we did it. But one thing that we did in our approach, not only that the families were heroes, but that they were doing us a favor in providing this information. That, yes, we were paying them, but really, they had what we wanted. We wanted to know what their needs were. And so in every way that we approached it, we were just in awe of them, first of all, that they were doing what they were doing. They were doing such a great job at what they were doing. So we just approached it from that standpoint. So every email that we sent, every interview that we had, that was the approach that we took. And as a result of that approach, we started really getting close with the families. And as I think about it, I just kind of almost tear up, because it was just such a wonderful process that we went through.
What I want to add, the reason I'm having Audrey talk about the process, I believe that, just to interject for a second, we had families tell us, we look forward to your visit. We look forward to the 2 hours that you'll come and be with us. Now, we weren't doing, the point is, we weren't doing anything for them. They were bringing from within their knowledge. The process was also totally transparent. Anything that any of our researchers wrote, and Jim and his wife were part of our research team, went back to the families and said, did we hear you correctly? There was nothing hidden. There was no black box to any of this. It was all totally transparent, because our thesis was the knowledge is about you, not about us. We're not there to analyze you. We're not there to whatever that is. Psychoanalyze you, and we're there to be with you. And we didn't realize, I think, until maybe about the second or third visit, how important that was. And Jim, would you agree with that in terms of
just
listening and letting people overtly tell us, because if you remember the title, no one ever asked. So now, not only is someone asking, but it's being recorded. And it's being recorded and given back to you. This is not unlike a process, an assessment process, that you might make if somebody said, gee, I'd like to, let's do some financial planning for the next 10 years. So it may be forcing you for the first time to actually slow down your life, think deeply. We ask these families to give us, for which we paid them, 10 hours a month of thinking and preparation. We asked dad and mom to fill out the surveys separately and then talk to each other. And so they said, you know, sometimes it was 2 o'clock in the morning when we were doing the conversation.
They had to return the completed survey before they met with their research assistant. And so, I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, you're in the Bible study or something, you're hurrying up and doing it on the way to the Bible study, you know? And so they had to actually do it ahead of time and turn it in, and we had to have that information, have time to process it beforehand. And so I really think that that helped them to, they had to take the time to do it. And if they didn't get to it, then we were like, that's okay. Take another day, take another 2 days. Some families, we were leave behind a whole month because we wanted them to finish that process for that one, so when they could finally get to it, it was really good when they got to it. So that was also part of the process of the human side, was that we looked at every family individually, and some families were the ones that got their surveys done right away, on time, every time, you know, and then there were some that didn't, that, you know, were more far behind, and we planned that into the whole thing, that, you know, that's fine.
We flexed our schedule to meet their need.
Right.
Not saying, oh, you missed out.
Exactly. We give them the time that they needed to complete it. And it was always, whenever we would read a survey, we would cry a lot reading the surveys, you know. Did you read this answer? You know, it was just very touching. So let's see. I think I'm almost finished. I really think that one of the best parts of the whole entire thing was realizing, when we were through it all, that the tools that we had developed could be used. It wasn't just, at first, I was just thinking that we were finding out what their needs were, but really, in the end, we had these great tools that we developed that other people could use to find out what other families' needs were. And that was, to me, that was the best part, when the light bulb went on, that, oh, wow, yes, anybody could do this. What we just did, anybody could do this. So, to me, that just made the whole thing wonderful.
And I'm going to cover some highlights of things that, if I could became and change the world, what will we do with this? In the very center of this little booklet, I'm an old Boy Scout, so kind of think in terms of Boy Scout handbooks or Girl Scout handbooks. It's really interesting because, as I said earlier, we bumped into cultural norms, and I couched it in terms of things that encourage and things that discourage. When you read through this, you'll begin to kind of see if these were something that I could change the world, and if I could teach people behaviors and things that would come out of their mouth. So for you that might look to the Bible or look to the scriptures, you know the power of the spoken word as it's taught to us that way. And you also know probably times when you've been hurt by the spoken word, you've been hurt or encouraged by the spoken word. So here are things that families told us that encourage or discourage. Now, encouragement equals hope. Discouragement equals despair. So it's not incidental by any means as what's in there. I put it right in the center of the book. I thought, okay, this came right from this came from what they were telling us. Now, I have about 20 pages of their actual stories, if you'd like to read them, and I condensed it to some principles here. It's also interesting that after about the first interview, we started to identify from them things that I would call best practices. And I don't know if that's a term that's familiar with you're not. I'm an engineer by training. I come from a background of creating actual products and also a manufacturing background. And we think about if something is a best practice and it can be widely shared with others, then people have a way to aspire to that best practice or something that they could begin to build into their habits. So just with the 12 families, we identified 40 of those that if we could put those on 5-minute YouTubes tomorrow, I think would be useful to hundreds of other families. It would be useful to the medical profession. It would be useful to the educators who, in many ways, blame parents. It would be interesting and useful to a lot of other folks. So as we started to do this research, it became more than research. It became innovation oriented. Does that make sense? We began to kind of see ourselves maybe as a conduit of helping them have a voice to share with others what they had learned by the School of Hard Knocks or the School of Practical Knocks, whatever you call it, that others could learn. So that it was more than stories, it was really, really fundamental practical principles. The cultural encouragers and discouragers I put here, just because I believe so strongly in it, that I know that I need to change my view of the world. And this occurs for people in restaurants, it occurs for people who are taking their children shopping and how others think about them or things they don't say. It affects how families have been split. So stories of where once a child was diagnosed and grandpa couldn't identify that maybe the little boy would never throw a football, grandparent was gone. So these are deeply held, and I don't know if they're cultural archetypes, but they certainly were very, very strong. On the other side, we have great stories of hope. So some of the families that have been with us today and sharing their stories is because it's really, really wonderful knowledge and wisdom. And I think we began to appreciate that wisdom in the process, both with our tears and our wanting to help, but we said we got to sit back and listen. There was over 250 what we call jobs to be done that emerged in terms of asking them from a daily basis, a weekly basis, family basis, food basis, cleaning the house, painting the rooms, and it's in your CD. There's a whole battery of going through and assessing, well, if I had to slow my life down and think about things that just don't get done or are being done insufficiently, what might they be? So family A would have shared their 15. We took that, compiled the list, and shared it with everybody else so we had an aggregate list. Now, mistakenly, some people have said, well, what was the most important? That's not the way to look at the list. The list is, Tammy, what's important to you? Do you understand? So if I'm building a relationship, if it's a relationship of friendship, if it's a relationship of caring, and if it's a relationship of being of a servant attitude, it's what's important to you, not what's important to me. So the making of the list and the going through and assessing was a very personal family assessment. Then people chose the 5 things that were most important. We said, now, if you were going to write a little 1-paragraph job description to hire somebody for those 5, write the job description. What would it be? And they went on to write the job description. So it wasn't just choosing something that was abstract from the list, but it was saying, and you know, this is the way I want it done. I want this wall painted, but I want it done by somebody who knows what they're doing. Did you understand where I'm going with that? So it became pretty, pretty specific about, and now again, let's take you back to where we started. These weren't people who were complaining and whining. But as they started to develop the story of their life and things that could be better, things for which somebody could be a helper, a friend, we got that specific in that. When Andrea talks about tools, that's one of the tools that we're going to do a workshop in February. It will basically teach you how to use the tools. We also found that families went through this. They said, you know what? I went through this, and we've already started to figure out how to solve this one and this one and this one. Mm-hmm. You understand, we weren't there to provide solutions. We were just learning. But forcing us to make the list, analyze the list, which we helped them a little bit with, and then start to dialogue, mom and dad, about priorities. Starts to release pressure, reduce stress. So.
Then we also ask them who could do this job. And whether it's yourself, a neighbor, a hired person, we ask them who can do the job. And that was profound for a lot of them. So the one lady actually hired somebody to iron her clothes. You know, the one with seven kids. Who has time to iron when you have seven kids, you know? So.
Now, the page that I gave you, the single page, just look at that very quickly. Because this is a summary of, it's just a very cursory summary, but I wanted to also couch and say that jobs list is personal. But when you start to look at that jobs list, especially people who are in maybe the Stephen Ministry and you're already making a contact, here are people looking for, you may have certain things that you know how to do as part of your ministry training. You may not have thought about painting rooms. You may not have thought about meal preparation. You may not have thought about, and Betsy, one of your things was anticipation. So when you look at the jobs list in detail, it doesn't have it quite covered there, but if you have a special needs child, you're probably going to have more medical appointments. There are going to be more things going on in your life for which, if people knew what was happening, they could anticipate and be helpers in advance. Does that make sense? As you begin to kind of think about it. We also had them talk about, and maybe this fits something you haven't thought about, what are their spiritual jobs? Now, the spiritual jobs were not necessarily related to church. That was a separate thing, and we did that. So people talked about their spiritual life. And so having Kathy Baldock in this morning to talk about her spiritual journey, and Kathy's right here in town and been connected with Gary's ministry for a long time. All of a sudden you could say, you know, is our church really doing what it should be doing if that's what people are talking about their needs are? So if you're specifically thinking about the Stephen ministry, so when you look at that and you see there are 65 spiritual jobs, and if you're going to go as a spiritual representative of a church, I think it forces you to think about, what would I say when that tough question comes up that person's struggling with? This is tough. This is not to be treated in a cursory fashion by any means. But I think it forces us to be saying, if these are the needs, then how much better can we be prepared? I think I'm right with that, right? I mean, you begin to kind of think about it. These are the real needs that people have. And if in some of our, I'm sitting in a kitchen with one of my research team, and a woman says to me, I'm ashamed to have you in my home. I said, why is that? You see that molding? And her husband goes, oh. And then she says, yeah, we got seven rooms that are half painted. He says, I'll get to it. All of a sudden, just think about what I've revealed to you. I'm ashamed to have you in my home. I'm paying you to allow me to be in your home. But that feeling, that very real feeling of undone projects. So when you look at that list, you'll see undone projects. That in a typical family, you have the weekend to paint. Sometimes you don't. Some of these families, the entire weekend was dedicated to a medical practice that had to have happened on the weekend for one of these families. And it was a 24-hour procedure, so it only happened on the weekend so the child could go to school during the rest of the week. And when you started to understand how how disappointed she was, we weren't disappointed she was. That means she's not going to invite people into her home. Immediately, the word isolation pops up, right? Or conflict between dad who's maybe didn't get the job done, so he's not feeling good about it. And It's simple things like that that when you look at that list, I think it makes the items on that list extremely profound. So as we begin to kind of think about being a helper and what are the things that people could have used help with, so many practical, daily, weekly things. There are other things that you find. So we then also identified 200 stressors. Again, it's on your CD. And stressors being a little bit different than jobs to be done, what are the things that cause you stress? Things as simple as daily stress. Getting up in the morning, getting started in the morning. Tremendously tough stories about, especially for a child that might have had needed some prescription drugs or whatever, and the next morning there's no drug effect, and that's not everyone, but at the same time, there were things that just we would take for granted. Two other things of lifelong stresses. So as our medical systems have gotten better, children are living longer. Parents are now worried about what's going to happen to the child's, you know, outlive me. 50 years ago, we probably wouldn't have thought about that, right? So everything from insurance plans to legal connections. So as you begin to kind of think about our connection now with these families, it's every aspect of their life is touched in a way that's, in many cases, turned upside down. So it raises our awareness. You can understand our tears, but these weren't people who were asking for our tears. But through the empathetic connection, we identified these new things. We also have in here, because Gary and Sweet Life Systems has done a lot to impact and help churches, we asked them to define their ideal church ministry for us. So you'll find that there's 12 items in there that are what's it like for an ideal church ministry for us. Now think about the paradigm of going to church. Does that paradigm really fit? Just think about that. I mean, that's one of the most common phrases we use as we talk about going to church. That I've been an elder in a Presbyterian church for a long time, so going to church. What if these people are isolated and can't go to church? The body of Christ is bigger than this building, right? So that makes the church going to them. You flip that upside down and begin to kind of think about entirely new things that could be done. Interestingly, as you look at the, you'll see on there when you look through that, the ideal church ministry, and it also the personal spiritual journey that's there. There's a tremendous amount of needs. Gary said it earlier that in many cases, when a family has a child with special needs, they turn to their faith. Sometimes their faith doesn't turn to them. Don't know why. I'm not pointing a finger other than this is just a fact of life, and we've seen that in the literature. And as a final thing here, we identified through the families and through our research team, through people like Jim and Kathy Mills, over 150 new ideas that nobody has yet brought to life in terms of a product or a service to help families. So if there's any entrepreneurs in the room, I'm very serious. Once you start to have, so this is more than just the needs. They have solutions they'd love. So as you begin to kind of think about who you are, you know, there may be a framework that you're now working in, but there may be also things that when you read through that, you say, wow, I think I'd like to go out and start a service that way, or I'd start a business that way, or I'm starting a ministry. Maybe there's more to it than that. So I want to open it up for a few minutes for questions. And the question is, did families get to meet each other, and how do we do information sharing? For the first about 8 months, the families did not get to meet each other, but they were seeing each other's lists. So, you know, if some jobs that your family had, then the master list of jobs went over to this family. unidentified, so that you saw the total list, but and so by the time you actually were doing asked to do some rating, you did that in March. In March we brought the families together.
February
we brought the families together for a night out for mom and dad, and we basically did a sort of a romantic dinner, followed by a focus group afterwards. But I do have that DVD if you'd like to see that. But it was really a time out for them. I hate the word respite; doesn't make sense, you know. But I know that's necessary. And then we did a family celebration a month later in April, in which we presented each family with a Nobel Prize. So we took the theme of heroic families, and we asked our research team, who had been spending time with them, like Jim and Kathy, okay, for the two families that you've been responsible for, how would you like to honor them? So we did a night of honoring those families with any of their support group that they wanted to bring to that. So it was a research project that turned out to be something very, very, very different and special to us as we've been through the learning of who they were, hopefully to reveal things that are usable by other people. And we're in that process now of trying to decide how can we best make use and give this material away, but at the same time do other things that that's why I said entrepreneurs rise up and take the ideas and go run as fast as you can with them. It's a huge need. One last note I'll leave you with to finish this up. If one in five families are in this situation, how many families within 2 miles of your church are there? Huge. The numbers are huge. Now, you're not going to hear them as complainers, as whiners, by and large. But they are truly hidden from a lot of the typical things. It may not be in the restaurants because it's very difficult to do things away from home. It may not be in the normal vacation places because, again, another sort of degree of difficulty. Right? It may not be in even the normal playgroups. But the need is not just for a family, but it's huge. We've talked to several churches, and I'll leave you with this note, that say, well, you know, we've got one or two families in our church, and boy, it's all we can do to really help them. One of the families told me, well, I can't use his name, but he said, if churches really, and again, I'm not speaking directly to churches here, but really began to meet the felt needs, people would come out of the woodwork. It is so huge. Now, it may not meet, you meet it in the normal way that you've thought about church. So your innovation may be in terms of how you build a relationship, how you spend the time, how you bring other services. I believe in the book of Corinthians that says, look at all these gifts we've been given. Right? We don't know each other's gifts. We don't know each other's resources. These families didn't know that within the families. It's huge. It's phenomenal when you begin to think about the potential. So, thank you. If you have any other questions for us, grab us in the hallway, and we've got to go back and close up, or call us, write us, whatever. We're available to answer more questions.